Okay, so we're on the Chaf Aleph tonight. We've been discussing the idea of Zenenev Zelchaser, somebody's squatting in somebody's premises, and he would normally be somebody who would pay rent, but the landlord would not be somebody who, it was not a rental property, and he's there, and the landlord doesn't protest. Does he end up owing money or not? So we had a discussion about this. Let's look on Chaf Aleph and Aleph, the top line. Shalakli Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda Lamari Bar Mar. So Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda sent a message to Mari Bar Mar, but Amy Rav Huna, yes, I want you to pose the following question to Rav Huna. Hadar b'chatzer chaveru shlomi daito. If a person resides in somebody's chatzer, shlomi daito, without his knowledge, and it means it's throughout the sequence, it means shlomi daito is without his knowledge, but it means the landlord doesn't protest. Sarikla lolo sachar or lo. So does he have to pay for rent or not? So while the question, whatever was in transit, whatever could be for opposed, Rav Huna passed away. So Amalei Rabba Bar Rav Huna, so Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Rav Huna's son, gave a response. Hachi Amar Abba Mari. This is what my father, my master said. So Mishmei the Rav, and it was Rav, my father, Rav Huna, said this in the name of Rav. Eino Tzirich L'Lo L'Sachar. He doesn't have to. That's it. Eino L'Tzirich. That's the way we paskin that. It's Zenenev Zelchaser is not chayav of any money. And then he added a second halakha, which we don't understand and we must be patient. Vasokher bayit mi Reuven, mala sachar l'Shimon. If a person leases a house from Reuven, he has to pay the rent to Shimon. So we don't understand what's going on. He's renting the house from Reuven. How can he pay the rent to Shimon? So the Gemara says, Shimon may have to tell you, what does Shimon have to do with anything? And Michal Shimon just walked in when I said that. So he says, Hachi Ka'amar, this is what it means. Nimsa Habaya Shel Shimon, if it turns out in reality that the true owner of that premises is Shimon, Ma Lelo Safar, he does have to pay rent. So let's look at Rashi on this. The second wide line. Well, what he's going to say here, Tarti Bitmiya. That Rav Huna, or the statements coming in the name of Rav Huna, makes two statements that are contradictory to one another. In other words, in the last case, he's living in Shimon's premises without Shimon protesting, any working out deal with Shimon, become our Sarit Lo Safar. And yet the Gemara says he's got to pay rent for that. The earlier on, like we said, Darba Chatzir Chaverush Lomi Daito doesn't have to pay rent. So back in the Gemara, 10th line, Parti, the two seem to contradict one another. There's no contradiction. Had the Kaimel Agra, had a little Kaimel Agra. Last case, where it's a rental property, then it's not Zenenev Zelchaser, it's Zenenev Zelchaser, because he rents the property, so he's got to pay rent. The first case, Zenenev Zelchaser, it's not a rental property. So he says, "Had the kaima la agra lo kaima." Excuse me. He says, "Had the kaima la agra lo kaima la agra." Itmar nami. It would say to a similar give and take around 10 lines down in the Gemara. Amr b'chi bar avin. I'm a rav. B'chi bar avin. It's the name of rav. But amri lo. Amr b'chi bar avin. I'm a rav huna. Some say b'chi bar avin. It's the name of rav huna. Hadar b'chatzer chaveru shlomi daito. If a person resides in his friend's chatzer without his knowledge or consent, and in other words, the landlord's not protesting. He doesn't have to pay rent. He says, and then the second lacha, which we don't understand, but it'll be similar to what we said above. If a person is leasing a premises from the people in the town, he has to pay rent to the true owner. So the Gemara says, what does the Balaam have to do with this? He's leasing it from the Bnei Ha'ir. This is what it means. If he finds out who the true owner is, or owners, Malin Lahan Sakar, he's got to pay rent. So the Gemara says, Tarti. That's also, again, similar to above, two contradictory statements. The one statement, I'm living there, I'm squatting there, so the true owner doesn't know or care or doesn't protest, I should say, doesn't protest, so I don't have to pay any money. Second case, also, I'm living in the premises, he doesn't protest, but here it says, I do have to pay money. So the Gemara says, no, had the Kaima La Agra, the last case where he's got to pay the rent, it's a rental property. So if I'm occupying the space, it's like the guy is losing money on me. Hadalo kaimelag. Well, the first case where it wasn't omeid for it wasn't rental property. All right, let me pause for a second. Any questions, comments, thoughts on anything I said so far? Everybody good? All right, I'm going to move on. Okay, so we're on 20 lines down, a Chaf Aleph Mod Aleph. Amrav Huna, So now we have a statement, Rav Schora in the name of Rav Huna, in the name of Rav. Hadar b'chatzer chaver shlomi daito. The person resides in his friend's premises, shlomi daito, with his knowledge, and the person not protesting, ain't sarich lo sakar. Just the same as we said above, before we have Rav Huna, now we have Rav Huna in the name of Rav. He says, Mishum shenemar, ushiya yukat sha'ar. It says, ushiya yukat sha'ar. So Rashi is two pshatim. The first pshat is that there's like a shade, and the shade, the demon's name is Shi'iyah. Shi'iyah will like destroy a premises, meaning that when the person resides there, he's conferring a benefit on the landlord. In other words, if I'm squatting on the premises, I'm in a way conferring a benefit on the landlord. Let's see Rashi on this, the fifth narrow line. Shenemar, Ushi'iyah, you cut Sha'ar. Shei Shishmo Shi'iyah, Mechatet Sha'ar Bayit, Shein B'nei Adam Darim Bo. This demon, whose name is Shi'iyah, he destroys like the gate and the house that people don't live there. The Hilkach Bo, the person who's in the premises, Hehenehu. So he conferred a benefit on the landlord. So here the Gemara, we'll toss in a minute. The Gemara seems to kind of be reversing flow. Up until now, we assume that, you know, the person who's Darba Katsero, Shlomi Daito, he's on the receiving end of all the Hana, and the other one is getting nothing. Now the Gemara seems to be saying landlord is getting something because he's keeping this demon away. He says then in Rashi, Lishna, different version, different shot, Bayit shu sha'ui biachid, a house that's like desolate and alone, Me'in Adam, without a person, Yukat Sha'ar, will suffer destruction. Mazikin mechatzinotel, Mazikim, destroy it. So he's helping out the place by occupying the premises. We'll see in a minute. He says, back in the Gemara, Amar Mar Bar Ravashi, Ludidi Chazilei, Umanagach Kitura. Mar Bar Ravashi said, I saw this demon and it was like goring like a bull. So the Rav Liebman was quoted from the Mukhe Yosef says, like that he was quoting, I think, from the Yad Ramah, that it doesn't mean like literally that he saw the demon, but he means like when the house is left empty, it sort of goes to, it gets into a bad situation. So let's say, look, Rav Yosef Amar, now, the way Rav Liebman was saying, so again, this seems to be going against what we said earlier. We said that the squatter isn't conferring any benefit on the landlord. Now the Gemara is saying the squatter is conferring benefit on the landlord. So Rav Liebman was quoting from the Rashba today, and he was saying that when you occupy a premises, you sort of like, you know, like wear it down a little bit, or, you know, the place gets a little
You blacken the walls.
more used. So he was saying that this benefit like counteracts like his you know sort of depreciation of the premises. In other words, the person occupies the premises, so it gets a little worn, depreciates somewhat. So this benefit that he confers on landlord, you know, corresponds to that depreciation. So let's see back in the Gemara. The Rav Yosef Amar Beit HaMiach BaYativ. Rav Yosef says a house that's like inhabited is becomes more habitable. In other words, let's see Rashi on that. He says on the 10th line of Rashi, Beit HaMiach BaYativ, Bayit Shu Miyushav Dir B'nei Adam, a house which is where people reside, Yativ Yishuvo Kayam. In other words, it remains like suitable for habitation. Lefisha Darim Betocho Rowin Mashu Tzarich Metaknato. If people are there, they see things need to be fixed and they fix it. In other words, I'm in the premises that the roof stops and starts leaking, you know, then I repair it. You know, other things happen, you know, I change. You know, I think in with insurance policies, there's a big difference if you want to get a homeowner's insurance policy and you're residing in the premises or you're not residing in the premises. You know, the insurance companies much prefer you to be residing on the premises for that reason. So here is giving like so we have one idea, you're not there, the demons come and attack the place. Or you're not there, the place kind of like falls into a state of disrepair because when people are there, they kind of fix it up. Let's see back in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, "My Beinai, what's the nafkamina between the two explanations? Either way, I'm saying that the person who resides there confers a benefit on the landlord, but one is saying I keep the demons away, one is saying I'm keeping the place in a state of good repair. So Ika Beinai, the Kamishtamish Bab at Sibevitivna. The nafkamina would be if the true owner is using the premises to store wood and straw." So he says, so it means this demons won't be hanging around because he's using the place. But like there won't be people there who are maintaining it. So if I say the first reason, so then there's no benefit because he, in other words, I'm not conferring any benefit on him when I'm squatting there because he's already got the straw and the wood chips there, so the demons are staying away. But for the other reason that I need to keep it in good repair, so then that would be a difference there. Let me do a few more lines, then we'll pause. Ahu gavra d'bana apadna akil kalta d'yatne. There was a certain person. He built a mansion onto the dump heap that was owned by Yitomim, owned by orphans. Agbe Rav Nachman la padne. So Rav Nachman sees his mansion away from him. So we don't know all the facts yet, but the Gemara says lamech sabra Rav Nachman hadarba chatzer chaverishlomi daito tzarich lalolo sakar. So the Gemara says, should we say that Rav Nachman holds that a person who lives, like squatting on his friend's premises, shlomi daito, without his knowledge or consent, tzarich lalolo sakar, meaning that this person who built the mansion, he's occupying at least the property, certainly that was owned by Yitomim, and even though it was used for a dump, he's occupying the premises and he's not paying him anything. Therefore, Rav Nachman sees the mansion. So the Gemara says, "Hahumi kar karbanayu hadu dairi bay." No, the Gemara says initially there were these other people occupying the premises, the karbanai. So karbanai are other people from Karmon, or let's look at Rashi. I didn't say right on the 20th narrow line. Karbanai shem uma. Rashi's karbanai are people. The people are known as karbanai, like a nation. He says lishna harina kadmonai, or Rashi has a different version instead of a reish of a dalid, basically. That the earlier ones lived there, Kadmonai, Kabonima Yushrimbo, Umalim Scarli Tomi, Bablai Kaimalagra. So it's not a case of, in other words, Zen and Nevis Elochasir is talking about where it's not a rental property. So the Gemara is saying, no, it was a rental property. And there was some rent being taken. But let's see back in the Gemara. He says, Yahabu, they just paid like a token amount to the Yitomim. It was like a negligible amount in rent. So when this person built the mansion on the premises, Amarle, Zil Paisilu Yatme. So Rav Nachman said to the owner of this mansion, why don't you pay a little bit to the Yitomim? In other words, in Akinami, it's worth more than that, but Bezdin is authorized, at least the way the Trumas HaDeshen takes it, that you see from here, the Bezdin can negotiate on behalf of the Yitomim and say, split it down the middle or something like that, just pay a little bit to the Yitomim. Below Ashkach. So the guy didn't pay attention to Rav Nachman, the one with the mansion. So Agbi Rav Nachman la panimine. So Rav Nachman sees the mansion from him because he wasn't happy with his conduct. But it doesn't relate to our topic of Darba Chaser Chaver Shlomi Daito because we're talking about there is not a rental property. This was a rental property. Okay. Who's got questions, comments, and thoughts on anything we did so far?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay,
Southern
wait, Michael has from the Carmanians. Let's go ahead.
province known as Carmania, now referred to as Kerman Province.
Oh.
Capital of the city of Kerman.
Wow.
It's located in the western Iran, south of Kurdistan, and was an important agricultural center that imported, exported fruits and vegetables to the rest of the country.
Okay. All right.
By this.
Okay. All right. Now, all right. I hope you got that in, Ruth. All right. All right. Now, let's take a look, see what we got here. I'll read a little blurb from the Daf Yomi Digest. He says the Sefer Kav HaYashar writes that there is a tradition from Rabbeinu Yehuda Chassid that one should not move into a house that was unoccupied for 7 years. Some later authorities suggest that Ar Gemar is the source for this tradition. Ar Gemar relates that a demon called She'iyah moves into a house that is unoccupied. The Sefer Shmirat HaNefesh qualifies this tradition and writes that this restriction applies only if the house was unoccupied and did not have a mezuzah on the doorway. But if there was a mezuzah on the doorway, there's no need for concern. The rationale behind this qualification is that the mezuzah protects the house and prevents the demons from taking residence in the house. He notes, however, that it's improper for a person to affix the mezuzah specifically for the purpose of providing protection, as mentioned in the Kesef Mishnah. The Tshuva's Divrei Yatsiv relates that he is often asked when the obligation to fix a mezuzah to a new house begins, from the time the family moves into the house, or even before they bring utensils into the house. After he cites the opinions of many Rishonim who discuss when the obligation to affix a mezuzah begins, he cites our Gemara's discussion about the demon that moves into an unoccupied home. Accordingly, since it would be dangerous to leave a new home unoccupied because of the fear of demons entering the home, one should be careful to fix a mezuzah as soon as the construction of the home is completed, even if it is before the family moves into the home. Based on this concern, he offers a novel explanation on the commentary of Rabbeinu Yonatan ben Uzziel. So there's a Targum, Yonatan Ben Uzziel. Yonatan Ben Uzziel didn't write this Targum because he only wrote a Targum on Nevi'im Ketuvim. What it means is another Aramaic translation in the Chumash, on the verse, on the Pasuk, that discusses, you know, Mi'a Ishasher Banah Bayit Lo Karacho. Person built a house but didn't yet dedicate it. He says, so Rabbi Yonatan Ben Uzziel writes that the verse refers to one who built a house and did not yet fix the mezuzah. It seems, explains Divrei Yatziv, that the pasuk refers to someone who's not yet fixed the mezuzah because he hasn't moved into the home. Nevertheless, since he did not fix the mezuzah, the demons have the opportunity to move into the home. This puts the homemaker's life at risk, since Satan has the ability to make accusations during times of danger, and that is the reason he should not go out to war. So if he's got a house, he didn't put the mezuzah on, and now he's in a state of war, so he's going to be in a kind of Satan if he doesn't go and be Makana at the house. No. He built the house. The house is complete. He didn't put a mezuzah on yet. That's the way the ring. You don't tell me the seal. Well, that's the way we usually paskin. But but if you're going to war, so that's the way you don't tell me the seal is saying. Like one of the Peturim from the war. He's like much more vulnerable. Okay, everybody good. Everybody happy.
Rabbi, don't we say that Shlomo HaMelech got rid of all the demons and there are no more in the cities? Why are we concerned about this?
I don't know. It's throughout Shas. There's shadim all over the place. Okay, Michael heard something on that. But, here you go.
When there was a high level of Kedusha, there were demons. Now that there's Hester Panim, there are no demons.
That's similar to what Rabbi Yavis Gil Kamenetsky said.
Exactly.
So who did you hear today about this? Anyway, but the Gemara is full of demons all over the place. Okay, let's see back in the Gemara. No, we're around 20 lines from the bottom on top of the dollar. Okay, so let's go back to the Mishnah we did yesterday in the new tenement days, and let's refresh our recollection. So we said in the Mishnah, if the animal is walking in Rashid Arabim and it eats something, so Shane Rashid Arabim is Patur. But the Tana Mishnah said, the third white line on your tenement days, Bimnenate Mishlamin Mashnenate. But if the animal got Hana from it, like we discussed, in other words, the animal ate a meal, and so now the owner doesn't have to pay for the meal, so he has to make some restitution. Kesad mishlamin mashenenid, achlam itokur rechava mishlamin mashenenid. If the animal ate in the street, so the owner has to pay with the hana. Mitzirei rechava mishlamin shayzika. But if the animal eats on the side of the rishus arabim, then you have to pay the fair market value of what the animal ate. That's not shein rishus arabim. That's like shein, you know, Bershus and Nizak, so to speak, because it's Sidi Rishon Rabim. Then the Tana Mishnah says, "Mi petach hakhanut mishlam shneni." If he eats from the petach hakhanut, like at the open way of the stores, there were stores along like the main drag in the Rishon Rabim. So storekeepers would put like little tables in front of the store. They take the shutters and they put the food on the tables. So if the animal eats from that, that's like in the Rishon Rabim in mishlam shneni. Mi toch hakhanut mishlam shayzika. But if it eats from inside the store, then you have to pay the actual damages. Okay, let's go back to Chafal from an Aleph, 20 lines from the bottom. So the key here is the line that if it eats from Sidei Rishon Rabim, if the animal eats from things that are not in the Rishon Rabim per se, but the Sidei on the sides of the Rishon Rabim, then they have the high level of damages. Then you have to pay just the same as if you would, you know, be eating the Rishon Saniza. So So Rav says, the Mishnah is talking about where the animal itself is in the Rishus Arabim, but it turns its head and eats the Tzidei Rishus Arabim, then he's got to pay the full damages, like the Mashay Zika. Shmuel says, no, if the animal's in the Rishus Arabim, even if it turns its head and eats the Tzidei Rishus Arabim, it still gets the favorable treatment from the owner of the animal's perspective and pays Mashanene. So what would be the case with Shmuel that you'd have a case with the Rishus Arabim that the Mishnah is speaking about, meaning that you're chayiv, see the Rishus Arabim? What would be the case according to Shmuel? He'd go on the Shabbat to the Rechava, but Azla become the Seed Rechava. But the animal left the Rishus Arabim and walks into the Seed Rishus Arabim. Seed Rishus Arabim is an area where people like do, you know, they do transactions and you know, like we said, that the, you know, the storekeepers have their stalls there. So he says, so according to Shmuel, the whole animal has to be in Seder Shusarabim to get the, you know, the stricter treatment. Then some want to say that this whole discussion, the whole machlok with Rabbi Shmuel, did not relate to our Mishnah, but was a separate freestanding discussion. Mechazeret, if the animal turns its head, Rabbi Mar Chayevet, in other words, it turns its head and eats from Seder Rishus Rabim. So Rab says it's Chayev Mashvi Zika, Shmuel Mar Ptura. Shmuel says, no, it's Ptura. Shmuel, Meshlamin Mashvi Zika, Hechim Ashkaka, Lot de Bechayva. So according to Shmuel, how do you have a case where the animal would eat from Seder Rishus Rabim and be Chayev Mashvi Zika? You go into Shkaf from the Rechava, Azla become a Seder Rechava. If the animal left the Rishus Rabim and went on the Seder Rishus Rabim and eats there. Okay. So the basic idea, we said, we have a machloket between Rab and Shmuel about mechazeret. If the animal standing in Rishus Rabim turns its head and eats in Sidei Rishus Rabim, so then, according to Rav, then it pays the full value, the Mashi Zika, and according to Shmuel, even there, she's patur, because according to Shmuel, unless the whole animal is in Sidei Rishus Rabim, according to Shmuel, unless the whole animal is in Seder Shusarabim, it's getting the favorable treatment from the owner of the animal's perspective. Okay, so again, focusing on Rav says that if it's Mechazeret, if it turns its head and eats Seder Shusarabim, so it's Meshlamet Mashay Zika. Mativ Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, from Nachman Bar Yitzchak, posed the question against Rav from the following Braisa. This is from our Mishnah, I should say. The Mishnah says that if the animal ate from the entranceway of the store, it pays like the lighter treatment. It pays, you know, what you know it benefited from. So, what is, in other words, the petach lakanut is definitely not the rishus harabim. So that being the case, it sounds like it must be a case of mechazeret. But Rav said a case of mechazeret, it's mishlam mashay zika. But the Mishnah says, if you eat from Petach HaChanot, you get the favorable treatment. So, Pshita b'machazeret. So, we think it's a case of machazeret. The animal's in the Rishus HaRabim. It turns its head and eats some of the wares or some of the food that's at the Petach of the Chanot. The Kama are Mashinene. And the Mishnah says, Mafurash, that you pay Mashinene, like the benefit it got, but not Mashizika. Mashinene and Mashizika lo. That's a kash against Rab. So, who mutiv lab, who mafarik lab? So it says that Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak posed the question, and Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak answered the question. It says the kaima b'keren zavit. It's talking about where the store. Now it's hard for me to describe this, but you have a picture in the art scroll, and there's a picture on the page of the Gemaras. You have a big mavui and a narrow mavui, and the store is like at the part where in other words, the animal's walking from the larger section to the narrower section, and the store is right in the corner of the narrower section. So it's not turning its head to eat from the Petach HaChanut. It's like going straight forward and eating from the Petach HaChanut. It's not even turning its head. So that's treated like that's Mashaneni. That's Rishus HaRabim. So that's the way Rav will answer it. Ika Da'amri. Okay, that's that piece. Okay, so let me pause for a second. So again, we had a machlok between Rav and Shmuel about Mechazeret. According to Rav, Mechazeret is then it's paying, even though it's standing in Rishus HaRabim, it's going to pay the full damages. And according to Shmuel, no, you get favorable treatment. Okay, who's got questions, comments, thoughts on anything we did so far? Okay, I'm moving forward. Okay, now, let's take a look back on the Gemara. We're 8 lines from the bottom. Everybody with me on Chapal Chomet Aleph. Ika de Amri, others say, Bechazer Kuliyama lo plik de Chayevet. Others say that no, that there was never a machloket between Rav and Shmuel but Machazeret, that they both agreed with Rav's pshat. Then, in other words, Mechazeret is definitely high of full damages. He pligi even makatsa makom rishuto l'rishet harabim. The machloket was if a person, like Reuven, has a piece of property that abuts the rishus harabim, and Reuven decides that he's going to build the wall to his property set back from the rishus harabim. So his property actually goes up to the rishus harabim, but he's building his property line wall or his property line fence, you know, let's say 10 feet or 10 amot back from the rishus harabim. And then Reuven is leaving food in that sort of like buffer zone that now is open to the rishus harabim. And the question is, what is the status of that buffer zone you know, that it's open to the Rishus HaRabim. This is back on the Gemara. So he says, he makatsa, in other words, he assigns a piece of his Rishus to the Rishus HaRabim. Bahasi etmar, Amarav lo shanu l'machazeret. Rav says that when the Mishnah says you're chayev for mashe yizika, the owner of the animal is chayev for what the damage it did, that's machazeret. About makatsa makom reshutol reshut rabim ptura. But if it's not a case of machazeret, it's a case where somebody, like, you know, with the way I described, he left like a piece of his property open to the reshut rabim, and he left food there, and the animal goes and eats that food. Then the animal is entitled to the same treatment as any animal in the Rishus HaRabim. Shmuel Amar, Afilu Makatze Makom Rishuto, Rishus HaRabim Chayevet. Shmuel says, no, with Makatze, that's like eating in the Rishus HaNizak. In other words, in that case, like Rishus HaNizak. So the Gemara says, okay, so everybody have that, so it's a different way of understanding. No? What?
Can you repeat that piece just
okay,
now?
Right now. Okay, let's all focus, okay? So we said that with mechazeret, if the animal is standing in Rishus HaRabim and it turns its head and eats something from Sidei Rishus HaRabim, everybody holds, according to the Sukkimta, that you're chayav. There was no machloket about that. The machloket relates to something else, where a person, Reuven, let's say, has a piece of property. His property extends to the Rishus HaRabim. But for whatever reason, Reuven decides to build the wall up to his property, let's say, I'm just taking an example, 10 amot set back from the Rishus HaRabim. So he's like de facto opening up his property to the Rishus HaRabim. And then let's say this Reuven leaves food on his front lawn, which is, you know, open to the Rishus HaRabim. So, and then the animal walks onto the property and eats that food. So is the animal entitled, is that the same as eating the Chatzar Nizak? Or is that eating like something in the Rishus HaRabim? So Rav says, according to Sukkimta, that he says that it's Ptura. In other words, if it eats, Ptura means it's going to be like Mishlam and Mashanene, just like the cheaper version. And Shmuel says, no, it's the full damages. Okay? Everybody good? Okay. Let's see back in the Gemara. So the Gemara says four lines from the bottom. Lema b'bor b'shuto k'mithlagi. Should we say that this machloket, as we've explained it up till now, tracks a different machloket tanaim, Rabbi Shmuel of Orion, but it tracks a machloket tanaim about bor b'rshuto. So bor b'rshuto is, everybody agrees, if I dig a bor in the Rishus HaRabim, that's the case the Torah discusses about bor in the Rishus HaRabim. But let's say I dig a bor on my property, and then I'm mafkir my property except for the bor. Is that also a case of the same din of bor b'rshuto HaRabim? So according to Rabbi Akiva, absolutely, that's the way it goes. Rabbi Akiva says, and so as a corollary to that, if it has a din, in other words, if I could take my property, dig a bore on my property, and then basically be mafkir the property, and that's considered to be a bore versus a rabim, that would go with Rav Shita. In other words, here he's putting, let's say Reuven, he's putting the wall to his property 10 feet back or 10 amot back from Rishus HaRabim. He's putting his fruit out on his property. The fruit that he's putting on the property is like a boar of Rishus HaRabim, because the animal could slip on that fruit. And that's like a boar. It's like a stumbling block. But the halacha, as a corollary to that, so in Achinamim, the one who built the boar is going to be chayev for nizke boar. That's one thing. But as a corollary to that, people are free to take the food for themselves. That's what the Gemara learns. The Gemara learns where is it? Yeah, on the first wide line in Rashi downstairs, the Kaimam Nichadakad, Kol Makalchlim, Bershid Rabim, Sheziku, Kavim Lashalim, Bechol Amachzik Behen Zacha. Whoever grabs onto the food is Zocha with it. So we think that Rav Shita, that we're going to give favorable treatment to the owner of the animal, is similar to Rabbi Akiva's Shita. Now, it's not exactly identical, because Rabbi Akiva says that you could seize the fruit, the object that's causing the boar, and without paying anything. And here Rav is saying you have to pay something, but it's a lesser amount. But we think that in a broad sense, it matches up possibly with Rabbi Akiva. And Shmuel, who says it's a patur, we think that matches up with Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says that It's not considered to be a bor b'rishus harabim. So if it's not considered b'rishus harabim, so that means the behema who eats it is eating it on my property, and meila then they're chayiv. That's what we think the case would match up with. So four lines from the bottom of the Gemara, and I'll pause in a few more lines, okay? So lema b'bor b'rishuto kimiflugi. Rav damar patur, Rav says patur, meaning you're not going to pay full damages when the animal eats on my front lawn, sabar bor b'rishuto chayiv. Now, it's a bor b'rishuto is chayiv for nezikin, but as a corollary to that, if his fruit left there and he picks it up, he's entitled to do that. Shmuel damar chayiv. Shmuel says no, he's chayiv the full damages. Ksava bor b'rishuto patur. He says no, that's not like bor b'rishuto. Rav is bor b'rishuto. So that's what the Gemara thinks. So again, according to Sukkimta, there's no machloket about mechazeret. Machloket is about makatsa makom b'rishuto should rob him, whether that's and then the animal eats from it, whether that's the favorable treatment like Shmuel or the stricter treatment according to Rav. And we're trying to link that up with another machloket between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva later on Daf Mem Tet with Shorshan Gachar Para, whether that boar is considered to be boar b'rishus harabim or not. So the Gemara says, Amar lach Rav, Rav could say to you, Riola Meimalach, same page, Ba'alma boar b'rishuto patur. I could even hold that, in other words, my tzad is going that, my tzad is saying boar b'rishuto kind of. In other words, the simple shot is, I hold that it is boar versus a rabim, and as a result of that, when you eat the food, so you get the linear treatment. But I don't have to go that way. Ba'alma boar b'shuto patur. I could even say like the way the opinion that we were ascribing to Shmuel and to Rabbi Shmuel, ba'alma boar b'shuto patur. B'shani haka da'amar lav kuklina to mekarbet lo d'peiroteich l'b'shuto rabim type l'toroi, because the owner of the cow, in other words, we're not going to view it from the homeowner's perspective, from the owner of the cow's perspective, he could say to the person who left the fruit there, "Lav kuminat the makarbel of the perotet l'shud rabim." It's not your right to leave your fruit so close to the shud rabim umechayvet luhu the torai, and then to demand payment from my ox from eating that fruit. It's just that's not fair. So I can hold that bor b'shuto patur. And it's not bor b'rishus harabim, but as a practical matter, that's what the person could say. He says, and then on the third line, Shmuel amar ba'alma bor b'rishuto chayav. Shmuel could hold, like the opinion that we ascribe to Rav, that bor b'rishuto chayav, that in the chanam you're chayav for bor. So as a result of that, we would think that, you know, the person is allowed to, you know, collect the fruit and keep it, and there'll be lesser chayavus. But nevertheless, the b'shleim of bor, ikalamimar, lava daite. So by bor, again, the owner of the animal, we could think, is like, he could say, labadaite, that the animal didn't realize he's stepping into a boar. Ela peirot, mi'ikulamemar labadaite, ha'chazilahu. But by peirot, can he say that the animal didn't realize it? He sees the fruit. So Shmuel says that you're chayiv for full damages, but it doesn't have to be related to the previous machloket. We could just say, like, you know, the owner of the ox, you know, the ox, you know, sees what it's eating, and the mela, and there's every reason to make him pay the money. Okay, now, the Gemara says on line five, so that was one way we had to explain about Machlokes Rabbi Shmuel, but now the Gemara says, Lei Mechazeret Tanaihi. Now, Mechazeret was the earlier way we explained the Machlokes between Rabbi Shmuel, so it means, the earlier way was that Rabbi Shmuel and Machlokes, if the animal's standing there, just a rabbim, and it turns its head, or moves his head and eats from Seder Rishus Harabim, is that like eating in the Rishus Harabim and you get favorable treatment? Or is it like eating in the, you know, in the Chatzar Nizak and you get the more stringent treatment? So Rav holds more stringent and Shmuel says the more lenient way. So let's see back in the Gemara. Lema Chazer Tanayi, Tanya, we learned the Braisa, Achlami Tocha Rechava, if an animal ate something in the middle of the street, Mishlamit Mashinene. That's so far so good, everybody would agree with that. He says, if it eats things on the side of the Rishus Harabim, Mishlam et Mashe Zika, Diver Remeir and Rabbi Yehuda. That's what Remeir and Rabbi Yehuda say. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Lazar Omrim, and we don't understand this and we must be patient, Ein Dark Lechol El Lahalech, that it's not the derech of an animal to eat, to stop and eat Rishus Harabim, it's to walk. So meaning, we think that he's saying that if the animal turns its head and eats from Seder Rishus Harabim, that would be like a different type of eating. In other words, right, Shane is in Rishus HaRav, and seen Rishus HaRav would not be. So the Gemara says Rabbi Yossi Haino Tana Kama, but as the way we've explained it, then the Rabbi Yossi and the Tana Kama is saying the same thing. So Ela Mechazeret Ika Benayim. So the Gemara says we must say the point of dispute between these Tanayim is the status of Mechazeret. If the animal is in the Rishus HaRabim and turns its head into a seat of Rishus HaRabim, meaning Tana Kama Savar Mechazeret Nami Bishali Mashaneni. The Tana Kama holds that even the Mechazeret it gets the favorable treatment. In other words, whether it eats in the Rishus HaRabim, it pays Mashaneni. And if it's Mechazeret, it also pays Mashaneni. And that's what he means that in the earlier part of the Braisa. He says, Rabbi Yossi Savar, Mishlamit Masha Yizika. And Rabbi Yossi holds, no, if it's Mechazeret, it pays Masha Yizika. In Dark Alakolo Halech means it's not Derek to go to walk, not to eat, not to turn his head, so it's going to pay Masha Yizika. So if that's the shot, then the Machloket that we ascribe to Rabbi Shmuel is Machloket Tanayim. So the words is low. No, I don't have to say that one is in any way connected to the other. I could say, as far as Mechazeret is concerned, all the Tanayim could either hold like Rav, or all the Tanayim could hold like Shmuel. And here, the Machloket and the Braisa is totally unrelated. Totally unrelated. Here, the Machloket is, what is, and then we said that the Hischaibus for Shane is Kiaver Ish Sadeo Cherem Shilach Biro Bier Bistei Acher. I send forth my ox and he consumes Bistei Acher, another Sadeh. So up till now we said Stei Acher means like in the Sadeh, the Nizak. That's the way we said it. And Rosh Hashanah and Patur. That's what we understood up till now. But it could be that this is the Machloket. He says Mar Savar Bier Bistei Acher below Rosh Hashanah. So the first opinion stated in the Braisa, which is Rabbi Yehuda, he says, because they'll stay out there and not in Rishus HaRabim. Rishus HaRabim, Shem Rishus HaRabim is Patur. Umar Sabar, but later Tanayim, i.e. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Lazar, Umar Sabar, B'yer B'stei Acher, B'lo B'rishut HaMazik. He's saying, B'yer B'stei Acher, that you're always chayiv, as long as it's stay acher. In other words, if it's not your rishus, in other words, let's say Reuven is the owner of the shore. So if Shimon brings his food and leaves it without permission on my property and my ox eats his fruit, so then I'm not chayiv for it. That's the shame I'm not chayiv for. Everywhere else, I'm chayiv. He says, so when he says here that we think, ein dark alakol alahaleich, so has he, one sentence then? One second. Okay. So he says here, he says, Bershus HaMazik. So the Gemara says, why would I even think, why would I even have a Havamina to think that there would be any Hischaivus if, you know, somebody brings their fruit and leaves it on my property? Why would he, when the Gemara is saying, not this way, but why would I even think that way in the first place? Lema, Perach Bershuti, my bai. Let Reuven say, what are your fruit doing on my property? So he says, so the Gemara scratched that. So the Gemara says, scratch everything we set up for now. The machloket now tanoim in the brisa is the machloket between Ilfa and Rabbi Oshia. Ilfa, if you remember, said that if one animal eats off the back of the other animal, that's like eating mer katzar nita. And Rabbi Oshia said, if the animal, you know, like haunches up on its hind legs and eats from my basket food in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, it's also chayev. And there's a question, Rashi sounded like Karen, like katzinezek. But someone is saying that's a kshalim. But that gufa is the machloket tanaim. Meaning, let's see Rashi on this, on the Rashi, Ika Benayhu, everybody with me? So he says, Rebeir Savar, Nitocha Rechabal, the Olam Patur, Elofima Shineni, Barfilip de Ilfa Reboshia. So Rebeir holds, the first opinions in the Braisa hold, that it's always been Rosh Hashanah, even if it eats off the animal's back, even if it eats out of the basket, same thing as Rosh Hashanah. He says, "Va'at Rabbi Yossi leMeimar in darka l'shot savara chaverta in darka l'kotz miderek l'achol el haleif." So it means that the derek of an animal is not to stretch forth its neck and eat food off the neighbor. It's not derek to stand on his hind legs and eat. But it laid ilfa with Rabbi Oshia. So those tanaim hold like ilfa and Rabbi Oshia that there would be his chayvus in that case. Meaning, the patur is if it's normally walking the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, but normally it eats while it's walking. But if it, you know, stretches forth its neck and eats off the back of somebody else, or it's on its hind legs, so then it would be his chaibus. Okay, who's the question comes to us? Anything we did so far?
I know it's not the maskana of the Gemara, but when we talk about the case of Shane that's not Kedarka, are they saying that it's Karen?
No, I don't think that they are. In other words, Shlo Kedarka is normally Karen. I don't think they're saying this level over here now. One second. Let me see what our one second.
Because I'm trying to put it into categories in my head.
I don't blame you. One second. Yeah, I think here they're saying that the Torah has a patur for eating Rishis Rabim. The patur for eating Rishis Rabim is when the animal walks normally and eats the Rishis Rabim and eats something off the street. But if it does something different and eats it off the back, then that's not the patur for Shane and Rishis Rabim. That's what I think Rashi's saying.
So it's really Shane, Shalok Kedarka, and it has a chiyuv with it.
Yeah, that's the way it sounds like. That's the way it sounds like. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, let's take a look. All right, on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis in the Mishnah. Everybody with me? Okay. All right, so now, Manitin. Hakelev Agdisha Kapsu Mirosh HaGag. It's a different case now. A dog or a kid, the animal kid, that jumped off the roof. Now, the roof, remember, the roofs of Chazal were flat, and it jumps off a Shubut HaKelim. And so they jump, my animals jump off my roof, and then they jump onto my neighbor's property where they're a kalim and they destroy the kalim. Let's say, you know, the Ming Vaz is there on the yard and then they jump on it. So the Kelav Gadish Kapsmer Shagab Shibur Kalim, Mishalim Nezek Shalim, Neshahin Muadim. So I, the owner of the dog and the Gdi, I'm Chayv Nezek Shalim, because that's Muad. He's, in other words, I'm forewarned that they're going to jump. He said, in other words, it's like regel, but it's here as jumping, but it's like regel. I'm chayav for regel, the chatzar and izak. Hakelav, now here's a case that we had earlier in the Gemara. Hakelav shenatal karara, if a dog took a biscuit, balach legadish, he went to like this wheat stalk, and it was like the wheat with the stalks piled up. Hakal karara, it ate the karara, it ate the biscuit, with lika gadish, and then there were like coals that were stuck into the biscuit, and he ignited the whole gadish. For the charara he owes full damage, that's Shane. And he says, for the gadish, he owes chatzi nezek. So the chatzi nezek is either chatzi nezek tsrorot, or it's Karen. So it's either that it was Mishuna that he brought the coals over there. I don't know, maybe he might have taught the coals in his mouth, whatever. There's something shinui where they bring it there. Or we discussed that it's a case of tsrorot and okayim chatzi nezek. Let's focus on the first case of the Mishnah, and we'll finish up today's daf. Now, the Gemara says, Tama de Kaftu. So the reason I'm chayiv in the first case of the Mishnah, when my animals jump off the roof and they break the kalim, is because they jumped. Hanaflu patur. But had my animals fallen from the roof and then crashed down and then broken kalim, I'd be patur. Al maksavar. So from here, I could deduce that the Tana Mishnah holds, Tachila toba pshia. Something, an act that began through my negligence. My negligence was leaving my animals on the roof without adequate, you know, security or guarding them where they could have jumped off. The sofo ba'onis. But at the end of the day, they fell, which is a different thing. Patur. It was chito b'shiyah b'sofo ba'onis, patur. Tani nami hachi, hakele b'agdi shikafsu mirosh agag, b'shiburta kelim, mishalim nezik shalem. Naflu p'turim. Okay, that's the same deduction as we made before. So the Gemara says, Hanich Laman Damar, Tchila Toba Pshia Basofa Ba'onis Patur. So according to the opinion that holds later on, that something begins to smack the Pshia, and then concludes the matter of onus on Patur, showing everything is good. El Laman Damar Chayav Ma'ik Lamemer. But according to another opinion, if it's Tchila Toba Pshia Basofa Ba'onis, I'm Chayav, how do I explain this Mishnah? Because the Mishnah sounds like that I'd be Patur, and the Brisa certainly sounds that way. So the Gemara says, in the Brisa it's explicit. So could go into Makarvi Kalim Lagabi Kotel. So he'll explain like this, that the Kalim are, in other words, let's say there's the wall of my house, and it could be there's a parapet on my roof also, like a maka, but the animals are not guarded, so they're jumping off of it. But in other words, if they would jump, in other words, the Kalim, my neighbor's Kalim are so close to the wall that if the animals would jump, they would not be impacted. So as I look at the situation ahead of time, there's no concern on my part that if they jump, they'll hit those kalim. But if they fall like a dead weight from the roof, then they're going to hit those kalim. So he says, if they jump off, they're not going to hit the kalim. So it wasn't even a case of Shia. It was, I have to guard against my animals jumping off the roof. But if it's something that, even if they jump, I'm not going to cause any damage, I'm not remiss from lacking guarding the animals. I mean, one of the animals fell off the roof, so that's totally an onus. Okay? So we're able to resolve the Brice and the Mishnah with that opinion. So Rav Zvi says the name of Rava, that sometimes the animal flops off the roof and the owner of the animal is chayav for damages. How so? Mashkakala b'kotel ra'ua. It could be where you have a kotel ra'ua, like a rickety wall. And again, it means like the wall that's going up, it's a parapet on the roof, but we don't understand the case. So my nihu, di'ibay le'lasuki da'ita da'afil orche, that the owner should have contemplated that maybe some bricks from where the roof are, maybe the animal's on the roof and jumping off the roof, and then it'll cause some bricks to go down and crash down. But the Gemara says, so flow nafil arche. But at the end of the day, the bricks didn't flop down. He says, v'nafil inu, the animals fell. So, t'chilato b'pshia v'sofo ba'onesu. So then that comes back to the same thing. T'chilato b'pshia, I should have guarded the animals more, but the animal was ones because the animal flopped off the roof. So, lo tzricha b'kotel tzar. So the Gemara says, no, the case could be b'kotel tzar. So Rashi says that the kotel was, let's look at Rashi, the fifth white line, the kotel tsar, shemakia gag tsar v'dachuk, that the wall that's on the roof is very narrow, b'chini cham b'rosh agag, havala sukidai to the kapsi amakia kadarkan. In other words, I have to be chumin amakia shutsar nafli. In other words, the animal didn't have, a good steady, foundation or what's the right, like a footing. He didn't have a firm footing on the wall, and so as a result of that, he fell. So it's sort of like tchidto b'pshi of a sofa ones. He says, or lishlach min tsar mishupa. Or a different version is tsar, but the wall was like slanted, and the animal like fell off the slanted roof. So see back in the Gemara, four lines of lo tzricha b'kotel tsar. So kotel tsar. So the Gemara is saying that the owner would be chayev. In other words, if it's a kotel tsar and my animal flops off the roof and crashes into the kalim, that is foreseeable. And sometimes I, as the owner, even though the animal's falling off, but the animal falling off is foreseeable, where it doesn't have a good footing or it's a slanted wall. So then I'm remiss and I'm liable for full damages. All right, now four lines from the bottom. Tanur Rabbanan, we learned the Braisa. You have a dog or a kid, shadilgu mimata lamala. If they jumped from below, higher up, and then broke kalim, peturim. So the owner of the animals are peturim. Milamalamata chayavin. If they jump down, then the owner. So if it jumps up, I'm chayav chatsi nezek. That's mishuna. In other words, the animals normally don't jump up to a higher platform or whatever. So that would be, so Rashi says, but if they jump down, I'm chayev. Back in the Gemara, two lines from the bottom. Adam b'tarnagol shidilgu, but if a man, a human, or a tarnagol, or a chicken, shidilgu jumped, bein milamal lamata, whether jumping down, bein milamal lamata, jumping up, chayavin. So in other words, chickens will jump up, and people will jump up. So you're chayev for both those. So the Gemara says on the top line of Chapez and Manalev, but the Braisa we learn, Hakelav Agdisha Dilgu, if a dog or a Gedi, so we're going back to dog and Gedi, the dog and Gedi, we said, is only going down. Going up, it's only Chatzinezek. Hakelav Agdisha Dilgu, Beimi Lamalamata, Beimi Matamala, Peturim. So the Braisa says, it's Patur across the board. And we learned that it was Chayev, and then either full Chayev going down and Chatzinezek going up. Here it says Peturim. Let me see what the Gra says. Yeah. Or so something here says his chayavin, but he says here, so tirgama rapapa, the apik mepa. So Rapapa explained, we're talking about that each one, the Kelev and the Gdi, they didn't do it the normal way that they would normally jump. In other words, they each borrowed the other one's normal jumping method. Kalba Bezkira, the Kelev did like a big jump. In other words, the Gemara learns when a Kelev, you know, wants to sort of jump, it kind of, if you look at Rashi, it, you know, it claws away a little bit and then jumps at the end. That's the way here it took a big jump. The Gidya Bastricha, the Gadi Bastricha, and the Gdi did Stricha. So Stricha, Rashi says the top Rashi, Shinoit Kiparnabakotel in Darkabakat Mashunim Hain. Ihachi Amai Peturim. So if that's the case, so why are they Peturim? Patruminezik Shalim Chayvim Makatsi Nezik. So it means it's Chatsi Nezik in these cases. So in other words, if the animal is doing like an unusual jump, it's Chatsi Nezik. That's Mashuna. In other words, if the animal's not doing the usual jump, it's Chatsi Nezik. Okay. Let me just do a few lines from some of the sheets, and that'll be it for today. One second. Now, all right, let me do one story, and then we'll see how we go. A certain wealthy man saw that his life was slowly fading. He felt very upset since he had been so busy accumulating money, he hadn't really focused on spirituality. Now it seemed that it would soon be too late. He did some very penetrating thinking, came up with a brilliant idea. He would leave his large house for use by the poor. Imagine the merit he could accumulate by having the poor live in his house rent-free for what he hoped would be many years to come. He drew up the necessary documents, but did not discuss this with his wife or family. I think you know what's coming. After he made these arrangements, he felt like a burden had been lifted from him, and he was very relieved. His illness was debilitating, however, and eventually he left the world. So now the man's dead, and he left the house to the poor. When his family heard about this great act of philanthropy, they were furious. What about us? How could he give away such expensive property? He decided to go to a non-Jewish court to demand justice. The community's Gabbai Tzedaka, who had been entrusted with the management of the house, asked the Maharam Sheik if he was permitted to pay the family off to avoid a fight. So the Maharam Sheik lives in the 19th century. He's Muhammad al-Hassan Sofer. So the question was posed to the Maharam Sheik. The Gabbai Tzedaka posed the question to Maharam Sheik, can he pay the family like a small amount of money so they don't do this litigation in non-Jewish courts? The Maharam Sheik responded, on Baba Kama Chafal, if we find that when a man built a house on a dump site owned by orphans, it would not have been ruled that he owed them rent for all the time he had been on their land and insisted that he appease the orphans. The Truma Sedeshin learns from the Rush that although the man was actually obligated to pay full rent, he need only appease them, since the Beis Din is empowered to release funds owed to orphans to avoid feuds and fighting, and the Shulchan Aruch rules this way as well. In other words, the Beis Din was authorized, and it was really the person who built the mansion should have paid full rent. But Rav Nachman said to him, just pay something. Because the Truma Sedeshin deduces from this that Beis Din is authorized to make an offer on behalf of the Yatomim, you know, there would be less than the full amount. The same holds true in our case. You could definitely pay something to appease them. But he concluded, they really have no right to protest the will, and this is out and out theft. All right. Now, we have also another piece here. I'll do a little bit about Zen and Evzel Chaser Patur. So the Halacha follows Rav, who rules a landlord who did not suffer loss due to his friend's use of his apartment cannot collect rent, even if his friend financially benefited from the apartment. He says, Rabba introduces the concept of kofin al midat stom, which means that Beis Din compels one not to behave in a selfish, stom-like manner by withholding a benefit from a friend without a valid reason. Based on the principle of kofin al midat stom, the Rav Yah rules that if one owns a vacant apartment, which is not for rent, not only can't the landlord collect rent from a squatter who lived in his apartment without his knowledge, he's morally obligated to allow people to use his vacant apartment in the first place. Since the use of such an apartment does not cost the landlord anything, Rav Yah reasons that it's considered selfish, stom-like behavior to prevent people from using it. Tosfos on Chaf Amar Aleph disagrees and maintains that the rule of kofin al midat stom does not apply to such a case. Tosfos says the owner is morally justified in keeping his apartment vacant if he so wishes. The Mordechai explains that since the use of an apartment is a marketable commodity for which one can charge rent, the rule of kofin al midat stom does not apply. In other words, what he's introducing in here is this idea of kofin al midat stom, like which Rabba brings down in Baba Batra. In other words, sometimes we force people to act a certain way so they're not like acting like the people in stom. So the question is here, can I force somebody to open up his vacant apartment? So the Mordechai says that the use of apartment is a marketable commodity. which you can charge rent, refusing free use of one's vacant apartment is not considered stolen-like behavior, since one has the right to charge rent for his apartment if he so wishes. Alternatively, the Birkas Hashem explains that one is justified in refusing entry to his vacant apartment on the grounds that he's concerned about a potential loss. Example, the tenant might damage something. It's only after the fact that someone lived in the apartment did not cause any damage that the Gemara exempts the tenant from paying rent. In other words, so the Birkas Hashem says that I'm afraid the guy's going to destroy things, do anything in the apartment. I'm entitled to keep something out of the apartment. Okay, now the authorities discuss whether the unauthorized tenant is exempt from paying rent, even if he lived there after the owner explicitly forbade him to use the apartment. The Nachlis David, citing Rav Chaim Volozhin, rules that if an apartment was not used for rent and the owner did not incur a loss, he cannot collect rent even if he explicitly forbade the occupant to use the apartment to try to evict him. Note, of course, the tenant is considered a goslin for occupying someone's apartment without permission and against the owner's will. Nevertheless, if he leaves the apartment intact without any damage, he cannot be charged for his use, where he is similar to a thief who returns the stolen object intact. The Torah disagrees and maintains that if the owner told the tenant not to move in, or told him to leave upon noticing him living there, the landlord is to collect rent even if he did not incur financial loss. Okay, let me end up for a second.